Great, thanks, Bhathi. So this is a joint work with Yang Chen, our graduate student at the University of Utah, Om Prakash Kanawali, who was a graduate student at USC and is now a postdoc at Stanford, Maria Kazanjeva, a graduate student at Stanford, and John Regeer, a professor at the University of Utah. And so what this talk is about is some efforts among some members of the TinyOS community to try and improve the dependability of sensor network software. It turns out that, you know, in practice, we have these complex distributed network systems, and, you know, one of the advantages of sensor networks is you get to put them in fun and exciting places, such as, you know, the redwood trees of Northern California, national landmarks, the Colorado Rockies, and even, in case of Matt Welsh, Ecuador. But in practice, we want these systems to operate for months or perhaps years unattended, but inevitably failures occur. There are bugs, there are problems. And because we've put these network systems in environments to observe an unknown, diagnosing faults is amazingly difficult. Essentially, you're trying to debug a program where you can't inspect its internal state because it's embedded in this environment, nor can you inspect its input. And because of this, memory bugs can be excruciatingly difficult to find. In part, the low-power microcontrollers that these systems use don't have any hardware memory protection. So some recent work by John Regeer and David Gay at Intel Research, who's also here, helped address this problem by introducing something called Safe TinyOS. So normally, TinyOS is essentially a bunch of software components that are a bunch of unsafe C code. And what Safe TinyOS does is it takes this program and, using a bunch of annotations and the deputy compiler, uses compile time checks and inserts runtime checks when necessary to turn what was a piece of unsafe C into a piece of safe C. From a compiler standpoint, you know, the problem's solved. We have memory safety. But unfortunately, it's not really solved from the operating system standpoint. In particular, when you do encounter a safety violation, what do you do? You don't really have many options. This is a piece of tightly embedded C code. There's no notion of processes or users. And so basically, your two options are: in the lab, you can spit out an error message, or in a deployment, you can reboot the node. Now, rebooting the node can be a very expensive operation. Over time, these systems generate soft state to improve their efficiency, things like routing tables, time synchronization coefficients. And it takes not only you lose uptime, but also you lose energy to recover the state. Furthermore, application state can be lost entirely, and it's unrecoverable. So in this talk, I'm going to talk about Neutron, a new version of the TinyOS operating system that addresses this problem. Essentially, what Neutron does is it changes how TinyOS responds to a safety violation. It divides a program into independent recovery units, and then allows recovery units to declare precious state that can persist across the reboot of one of those recovery units. Using Neutron reduces the cost of a violation. I'll talk more in detail what that means, by 95 to 99%. Applications can run unaffected when the kernel recovery unit reboots. They just see the processor being, you know, utilized for 10 or 20 milliseconds. In normal execution, there's a near zero CPU overhead. Furthermore, all of this works on the very limited resources of a 16-bit microcontroller. So for the rest of the talk, first I'm going to tell you about recovery units and how Neutron infers them. Then I'm going to describe precious state and how components can declare it, and then how it persists across reboots. I'm going to present some results showing the overhead and the benefits of Neutron, and then I'm going to conclude. So first, recovery units. So in essence, when we take a TinyOS program, it's a graph of software components. And these components, you think of them as objects. They couple state and code, but they can only be instantiated statically. Furthermore, all of their interactions are governed by well-typed interfaces. So we can know the complete call graph at compile time. And generally, these components have minimal state sharing. There are situations where you pass pointers, say for read buffers or write buffers or message buffers, but generally their state remains private. So then on top of that component graph, recent versions of TinyOS have a preemptive multi-threading system, where the kernel is a single non-blocking thread. Since the entire TinyOS kernel, there's no blocking operations. And then application threads make system calls by passing messages to this kernel thread. So given this structure, what Neutron wants to do is take an application and separate it into independent units that can recover separately or reboot separately. Neutron does this, infers these boundaries at compile time using a set of five constraints. First constraint is that one recovery unit can't call another. It can't be a direct function call because then they're bound and they're not independent. The second is that a unit has to have at least one thread. Any given component must be in one unit exactly, because if two units shared a component, then that means they're coupled and they're not independent. A component that's below the syscall layer is in the kernel unit. And finally, the kernel unit has one thread. Now, this last constraint's important in case some application tries to circumvent the syscall interface and call directly into the kernel. So with these constraints, Neutron can take what it might be a complex TinyOS program, and first, it can take the set of components that comprise all of the kernel services, can figure out that that's one recovery unit, and then based on the components and their interfaces and their wiring and their threads, can infer that there are, in this case, three separate application recovery units. Okay, so now we have these independent units that can have independent violations and then be recovered independently. And so then when a safety violation occurs, Neutron will reboot that component by itself. And how it reboots application components and kernel components is subtly different, so I'll go through them separately. So application units are a bit more complicated. So the first thing Neutron does is it halts all threads in the unit, and it cancels outstanding system calls, then reclaims all of the malloc memory, reinitializes all of the unit's variables, and restarts the threads. Turns out that in practice, canceling system calls has a bunch of tricky edge cases. In particular, while you've canceled the system call, there might still be state changes going on in the kernel, such that it can't accept another call. If you reboot the application, then it tries to reissue the same call, the kernel will say it's busy. So what Neutron does is it puts a pending flag in each syscall structure, and if you try to issue a system call and the pending flag is set, then you wait for the previous call to return before you reissue. And this is the small piece of CPU overhead that Neutron introduces towards normal execution. So with respect to cleaning up memory, since we're running in safe TinyOS, the heap is not corrupted, and so Neutron modifies the memory allocator to tag each block with the recovery unit ID that allocated that memory. And then it just walks the heap and frees all of the blocks allocated by the faulting unit. Now, if there are syscalls which accept pointers as arguments, Neutron waits for those syscalls to complete before cleaning up the memory in case a malloc message buffer is passed into the kernel, for example. Once the malloc memory is freed up, then Neutron reruns the C initializers. And it turns out that one of the things Neutron does, it reorganizes the image so that each recovery unit has its own separate data and BSS section. Then now this is done, the application threads are halted, the memory has been cleaned up to the initial state, and Neutron restarts the application threads. In contrast, rebooting the kernel turns out to be amazingly simple. All Neutron does is it cancels all pending system calls, outstanding system calls, with an e-retry, so that the application knows to retry, and then it just reboots the kernel. The one thing it has to do is it actually has to maintain the thread memory structures for all the application threads. If there's a safety violation on one of those, then you have to reboot the entire node. What this means is that if there's some safety violation within the kernel, that because the application threads are untouched, they can continue to execute unchanged. They maintain their state. So those are recovery units. The second thing that Neutron does is introduce the notion of precious state. Precious state is useful especially for the kernel unit, because if you think the kernel has a whole bunch of independent services, time synchronization, routing, dissemination, sensor drivers, and if you reboot the kernel, then what this means is that a fault, say, in one sensor driver written by a random developer is going to cause you to lose all of your other state within the kernel. And so Neutron allows a programmer to annotate variables as precious. And essentially, a group of precious variables can persist across a reboot. All the variables within a given component are part of the same precious group. And it's just using a simple annotation here, the @precious annotation tells Neutron that these variables should persist across a reboot if possible. Now, there are some restrictions as to what precious pointers can point to. There's some more details in the paper. So one of the rules to make sure that precious, to maintain whether precious variables remain consistent, because you can imagine if you have a variable that's persisting across a reboot, and there's something inconsistent in it, then you might just reboot again. So Neutron requires that precious variables be modified in atomic blocks. This means that if there's a safety violation, it's not due to preemption or interactions with another thread. And then what Neutron does is, at compile time, does a static analysis to determine what variables are tainted within an atomic block, the set of precious variables that are modified following all the code paths. If there's a safety violation within that atomic block, then those precious variables do not persist. There's a couple other mechanisms that you can use to check the validity of precious variables. There's some details in the paper if you'd like to look. OK. So what this means now is we have these variables we want to persist across a reboot, but there's a little bit of a challenge is where do we put them? Because remember, when we reboot, we're going to reset the current stack and rerun the initializers. Now, these initializers are going to delete what were the precious values, zero out the BSS. And so the next step is we want to restore the variables. And we need space to put these. So a simple option would be you allocate some scratch space, but this has a RAM overhead. You know, there's some space which can't be used by the rest of the program. So instead, what Neutron does is just reuses the stack. So it's doing this after the stack's been reset. It can just put all the precious variables up on top of the current point, rerun the initializers, copy them back in, and then reuse that memory. And generally, it turns out that the set of precious state is smaller than the worst case stack size, and so this doesn't institute a cost. So to evaluate how much Neutron can improve the dependability of these systems, what we did is we compared Neutron with safe TinyOS in terms of if you were just running safe TinyOS and there was a fault, what would the effect on the system be? And so we evaluated three libraries, CTP, the collection tree protocol, a standard routing protocol that's used in TinyOS, FTSP, the time synchronization protocol that is part of TinyOS, and there's also the tenet bytecode interpreter, the details of which are in the paper. And so the point here is to quantify what is the benefit of precious state in the sense of if there's a fault within the kernel, how do these systems behave? So for CTP, it's a routing protocol. It turns out one of its major costs is the number of broadcasts it sends. For low-power link layers, broadcasts are very, very expensive. So what this line shows is the aggregation over time of the number of beacons, broadcasts, sent by the protocol within the TutorNet testbed of 55 nodes. So generally, after about 25 minutes, nodes have sent, on average, about one beacon a minute. Now, if you were to, say, have three nodes at some point reboot within the network, the number of beacons goes up significantly. Because essentially, these nodes have lost their routing tables, and then they start beaconing to learn about their neighbors, and their neighbors respond, and this causes a flurry of high-cost beacons within the network. In contrast, if you're running with Neutron, then a fault doesn't cause this routing table to be lost. The kernel reboots, the routing table's there, and essentially, reduces the cost of a fault within the kernel by 99.5%. So for FTSP, the important metric is what's the availability in the sense of what percentage of the time can I get a valid timestamp reading? So this shows a CDF when there are no reboots. We see that, you know, for most nodes, about 50%, they're synchronized all the time. And then for kind of the worst, so the worst node is desynchronized about 15% of the time. So if you insert reboots into the network, in this case, nodes are rebooting at a reasonably frequent rate, the important part isn't the absolute value of this curve, but rather how much Neutron changes the position of this curve. That is, how much it reduces the effect of this reboot rate. Because in reality, you know, nodes are rebooting pretty quickly. You wouldn't see that in normal deployment. But the point here is the reduction of the cost, not the absolute cost. So with precious state, a kernel fault causes the CDF to look like this green line. Essentially, for the median case, is a 94% reduction in the time, the median time that a node is not synchronized. So furthermore, recovery units isolate faults. If there's an application fault, CTP and FTSP continue to run unchanged. If there's a kernel fault, application data is unmodified, and the application loses no data. Now, of course, Neutron does have a cost, and its most significant cost is code space. It's inserting things like initializers. There's all this management code to manage the recovery units and threads and rebooting. And so this table shows five sample applications and the cost that Neutron introduces in code size. Blink is a pretty trivial one that just blinks lights. test collection is something closer to a normal data collection application. And so what you see is that Neutron adds on the order of 1 to 5 kilobytes of program memory to the applications, an increase of 3 to 40%. 40% for a very small application, because its constant cost is a large portion. When there are no threads, then there's only the single kernel thread, and since Neutron doesn't have to manage different recovery units, it can elide a lot of code. And so the point here is that this customized reboot code that's generated at compile time is small, and it fits in the code space of these devices. So it's a reasonable overhead that can be used in deployment. So another question to ask is, well, given all of these mechanisms, how long does it take to do a reboot? So this table shows booting costs. So the first column node is the time it takes the normal program to boot, just a cold start. The second column, kernel, is the time it takes to reboot when there's a kernel fault. The third column, application, is the time it takes the application to reboot when there's an application fault. Kind of the important point here is that if there's a kernel safety violation, there's a bug in the kernel, then it takes about 10 to 20 milliseconds. And the CPU is busy for that time as it reinitializes hardware, restarts systems, and that's the only effect an application sees. So to me, what's kind of interesting about Neutron is it's trying to achieve the same mechanisms that we see in a lot of other systems, but it's doing so on these ultra-low power embedded devices. And so because of that, it takes very different approaches. For example, I mean, persistent data on OSs is a long-standing topic. HiStar has it. Rio Vista is a great example of, by persisting a file cache, you can improve transaction performance. But Neutron doesn't have a backing store. Instead, it's actually modifying all of the variables in place. And then if it happens to be that a fault occurs in mid-modification, then it just defaults and clears out those variables. Now, of course, the techniques here draw heavily from the work on micro-reboots. Essentially, what Neutron is doing is micro-rebooting subcomponents of the system. But rather than focus on enterprise-level services in Java, enterprise beans, it's looking at the lowest levels of a kernel and applications for these embedded devices. Furthermore, it doesn't require a transactional database. So there's been lots of work on recovering from faults in kernels, like Rx and recovery domains. And the major difference here is, rather than tracking execution state and rolling it back, what Neutron does, it has almost no cost in normal execution. It's just executing normal safe TinyOS, and it micro-reboots components when there is a fault. And I think sort of intent and goal, Neutron is perhaps most similar to failure oblivious computing. Martin Renard's fantastic talk on that. But rather than recover from faults, it's just trying to mask them. But I think the same principle applies. You don't want to use Neutron when you're developing your system, but you do want to use it when it's once deployed in order to hopefully mask the few bugs that still remain. And furthermore, you can sort of ask this question of, why do you go through all these mechanisms to try and have your code? Well, why don't you add transactions or do something which would maybe allow the system to do something a bit more intelligent? And the answer here is, unfortunately, a bit of practical concern, which is that because of the way that the TinyOS toolchain is distributed, it's very easy to update that. People just download it. But changing the actual programming model of the operating system and doing source code updates across the entire kernel is actually kind of difficult. For example, if we were to add transactions, there might be a big upswell within the user community. It's 90,000 lines of tightly embedded code. When you have the order of 100 downloads a day, those kinds of changes you have to be a little careful about making them. So in summary, Neutron takes a tightly embedded C program and divides it into recovery units, which can then be rebooted independently. It also allows you these components to have precious state that can persist across a reboot. And overall, what this means is that there's near zero CPU overhead in normal execution. Applications can survive a kernel safety violation. Furthermore, when there is a violation, precious state can reduce its cost by 95 to 99%. And all of this works on a low-power 16-bit microcontroller. Thanks. I'm happy to take questions. Hi, Matt.
Pretty surprising.
Yeah.
So this is very cool, and I look forward to trying to use it. But as someone who's had to deal with these kinds of faults and those deployments, I'm not really sure this is what I want. So the good thing about rebooting the whole node is that you're returning the whole thing to a node good state. And I can reason about that. But I'm in
So that, I mean, so as you know, right, so this is like, I have a great slide for you, actually. So, you know, the problem is that often these systems don't work. So the summary of this, there's all this text, is basically, this is from Matt's paper on the volcanoes. Absolutely. Did I know you were coming? Right, so, you know, you know what the problem is, right? That the system doesn't work, and it's impossible to figure out why, right? You can't figure out, and that's sort of what this text is saying, is we don't know why it really failed. We have some hypotheses, but it's in part impossible to figure out why. From my perspective, I'm not sure that memory bugs are the principal cause of sensor net failures. They're, you know, probably not. There are some cause, but they're not the major one. But if we can tackle that, then that reduces the set of cases, right? It reduces the set of possibilities. And I think, you know, any tool we have towards that end is beneficial.
So in our case, the problem is not knowing what's going on, not the fact that the nodes are busy. So one argument would be actually, instead of rebooting things, letting the application decide how to deal with the problem. Saying, for example, give me a flag or something that said, hey, this component got a exception, let me deal with it rather than you guys trying to just reboot things.
Absolutely. That would be a different approach would be, you know, could also be very useful if you had something like exceptions within the language. I mean, but certainly with respect to interactions, you know, the way that the recovery units are inferred are trying to, you know, be pretty certain that there aren't hidden interactions between the individual units. Now, it certainly can be the case that something is wrong and rebooting doesn't help. The paper talks about that, where at some point you just reboot the entire system. Well, so they don't have memory management units, these microcontrollers. Sure. So in fact, you look, current like Cortex M3s, the low-end ARMs, they don't have MMUs, they have MPUs. And so certainly actually Vanya Hoffer is here, is looking into, gosh, how could we use, if we started to have these mechanisms in ultra-low power processors, how could we use them to improve the dependability of the system? You're welcome to ask the people at TI and ARM for that. I've tried. Well, no, with respect to verification, certainly, you know, try doing things like running TinyOS through CLI. But it turns out that just the input space is so enormous. And often, you know, the issues that you happen to have with the code is that there are implicit assumptions people have that they're in the input they're going to get from the environment which don't hold. Like there's this one sort of famous bug where it turned out that the radio would signal receptions of packets that were 0 bytes long, which from the format is impossible, right? It doesn't work, but it did. And when you do that, this would then cause a memory access bug and the system would go into a bad state. And it took someone a month to find this, to figure out this bug. And so I think absolutely doing verification and simulation is valuable and it takes us so far. But inevitably, those have assumptions which then the real world breaks, and that's where things get hard.
Karthik Patavaram, Microsoft Research. I think this is absolutely the way to go to make systems survivable. But I have a question about how you make sure precious state is correct or is prevented. So you mentioned something about state analysis, but from what I understand, the memory corruption alert can go and override pretty much any byte of memory. So would you not end up
So remember, we're running safe TinyOS, right? So it's memory safe. What we're going to get is an error that, oh, you went off the end of an array, or oh, you dereferenced a null pointer. It's not actually going to do that operation. When using safe TinyOS, there aren't going to be memory access violations, right? That's sort of the starting point, because otherwise, sure, we couldn't just walk the heap and, you know, deallocate things, because who knows what the heap's like. So the starting point is that we're using this memory safety. Does that make sense? Well, so this isn't, maybe I misused the word taint. The point here is not that this memory could be corrupted, but that these variables could have been an inconsistent state. That is, I modified one, and I haven't modified the other, and they're some way coupled. That's the concern, right? There's been a violation, and shoot, we need to reboot, and these variables might be inconsistent. That's the concern. Does that make sense?
Okay. Kevin Close, UC Berkeley.
Well, so the first one is, we talk a little bit about it in the paper. It turns out that actually just naming just a small number of variables makes a big difference, like the forwarding table and the link estimation table of CTP, or the neighbor coefficients of FTSP. And I don't think I have a strong set of real guidelines on that besides you sort of see these are the values that take a long time to generate. Now, with respect to if the precious variable is the cause of the fault, well, then it's an inatomic block, and this, you know, suddenly this is the set of variables which could be inconsistent, and so the precious state won't persist in that case, and it'll be reinitialized. I don't think I quite understand the... Oh, one of the things that the deputy compiler... one of the things the deputy compiler asks you to do is to annotate certain variables to tell you aspects of it. For example, when I pass in this buffer within this length parameter, you tell deputy that this length parameter describes the length of that buffer. And now if you get those annotations wrong, then you can start having errors which aren't caught by the faults. And so to some degree, it depends on whether or not you've annotated the source code correctly. It turns out that one of the sort of the nice things about TinyOS I mentioned is that there are these interfaces, which are these typed interfaces, which are highly reused within the system. And it turns out rather than having to annotate individual functions, we can just annotate these interfaces. And then that tends to be sufficient for actually knowing whether or not memory accesses are safe.
Here, one last quick question.
Just to validate this approach, this is a technique that I think Telepony has been using for many years to not have to reload translation data and stuff on restarts. So I think this is a very valid approach to improve significantly the performance of most damp outages.
Thanks.